So welcome to our next session, I would say, Utopian Hacker Group Therapy, Learning to Retain Hope and Work Towards a Brighter Future, featuring Silex, Dakora, and Naaman. And I guess you will introduce yourselves and have a great session then.
Hello, Lifeforms Assembled in this room. It's nice to have you. As Khaleesi already introduced us, we are the Utopian Hackers who are actively being set about the state of the world. And we want to work towards kind of making it better and assemble and deal with that in a positive, constructive way. How do we retain hope? How can we still do something and work towards a brighter future without losing hope? Right, and that's the topic of discussion today. Just for you in the audience who are here locally, this is kind of a discussion group, but you can at any time join in, ask questions. You can also ask questions in the chat. As Bugspeed just said, you can just ask and then we'll read them, or you can open your mic and partake any discussion yourself. And you should know that this event is being recorded. There's an audio recording, but not a video recording. And maybe we'll publish that later, so if you want to join into the discussion with your audio feed, you should know about that. I'm Dakora, and I'm here with Salix and Naaman. You both are Utopian hackers. Salix, and do you see yourself as more of a Utopian hacker or more of a Utopian artist?
That's a good question. I think I would say artist, just because my output doesn't always concern typical hacking spaces. Like, it's not always technical, but it's not always breaking and reordering things as well. Sometimes it's just creating. Yes, I think more artist, but like, it's a spectrum.
Of course, it always is, and we've decided to do this panel because I heard you wrote a book about utopias, right?
Yeah, I am. Sorry, can you hear the sawing noise in the background? I'm sorry about that. If you can hear it.
I do it.
Okay, that's good.
It's your neighbors working positively towards the future.
Yes, they're using very artisanal wood, I think. I wrote a book 2 years ago about a time traveler, and she is dropped into contemporary Berlin by accident and writes like a diary about her observations of our time, but also compares it to her time. And the reason why I started writing that book was because I was annoyed by all this dystopian pop media, and like everything is full of zombies, and I like zombies, but I think it was just too much negativity. So I thought I wanted to, for myself, try and think of a future that is still facing challenges, but is not afraid to face those challenges and has not given up on itself.
Where you can actually affect something. I mean, I think we're very often like kind of celebrating the sort of problems we have and the sort of problems our societies are facing. But then it's very often focused on what kind of bad things will the future bring, and usually not what can we actually do to make things better, and what can we do as a community and not just like as an individual consumer.
So like I always thought that, I mean, utopian stories, which were very popular in the past with science fiction, are nice, but sometimes they just look reckless because they show all the good of the technology and without any of the risks. But then this almost obsessive dystopia science fiction that we had in the last few dozens of years is also a bit annoying because it does the exact opposite thing. It shows all of the bad things and none of the good things, and it affects you psychologically wise. And I like nowadays, like kind of science fiction stories, which are, I mean, they have cautionary tales, so they don't say everything is good, the technology only bring good things. If they say anything bad, it's like a cautionary tale, like don't do this or that. But they also don't lead to dystopia. and that's much nicer to read. And besides the future, you also have to think about the present. And when I read all the dystopians, it's really difficult emotionally.
I always kind of I don't want to see how things could turn out, because often these sort of stories are kind of telling you this is how it's going to turn out, like climate change is going to make the world terrible, or it's like, no, it's not going to be that bad, and we're like kind of making predictions. And personally, I don't think there's just one future, there's futures, and what I really try to focus on is how to get there, instead of like what is the possible space of futures, because I think that's just huge.
Yeah, I agree. Also, I'm a very small believer in the ability to focus an accurate future for more than 1 hour ahead. I have no idea how this panel will end.
It's very tough.
Well, I think one idea or one thing that I find helpful is to not imagine a utopia as like a prediction, but more of a goal to strive forward to.
Yes.
So that it's not something passive, but more something that we can, you know, do our little parts to get there, like making a congress, for example.
Yeah, that's just... Also, utopias give you hope, and hope is a power that drives people in the present. So it's not only a goal, it's also like motivation, at least for me.
Yeah, I thought about hope this morning. I think it's a two-sided, like it's a tool like everything else, right? Like if you use it in like a passive way, then it makes you complacent because you think, oh, everything is going to turn out eventually. But that is not what hope should be, right? It should be something, like you said, like it motivates you to actually do something.
Yeah, I mean, eventually everything that you do is in the present. And the question is what do you do now? So hope is something that motivates you to make actions now. For some people, dystopia is something that motivates them to do action now, but for me, it's the hope. I do things out of a happy place.
I mean, it's being motivated by fear versus being motivated, like, as you said, hope. Because when you know how bad exactly it's going to get, then all you're doing is trying to avoid something. And I think it helps to, like actually... hold in your head where you wanna be. Like, what is the space that you wanna be in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and how can you get there instead of just knowing what you want to avoid? Because I mean, fear is useful to escape, but personally, I don't find fear a very useful emotion to build. So I mean, fear is at least very much in the now. Like, fear is something I'm experiencing right now. And I might do something about right now, like, for instance, going away or having an argument with somebody, something like that. And it's not something I'm going to turn into some sort of long-term ambition.
Yeah, fear is a good motivator. Maybe, again, it really depends on the person. But for me, for a very short period, for an hour, for 10 minutes, for, you know, a car is about to hit me and I'm afraid, so I do the right thing. But for the long term, fear is burning you, and hope and good feelings is something that I can build upon to work every day many hours. It obviously depends on psychologically. So I had a thing, it's just a maybe almost irrelevant comment. Like, when I was inviting people to this panel, I told them that this is a panel about utopian hackers, group therapy, learning to retain hope and work towards a brighter future. And this name turns out is a bit less catchy than you would imagine. So eventually I just showed it and said, hey, it's a hackers feel good group about the future. So
I think that's great. You should have told me. I would have changed it. Neiman, you I think all of us are on some level doing something to work towards the future, but Neiman, you're trying to use the internet and like online spaces to like work towards a vision and like building decentralized online communities. What is the image of online communities? What should there be like in 20 years? What is that image that you're working towards? What is your personal utopia?
Okay, I'll try to say it without any words with triggers, because lots of the words which we normally use in my ecosphere can mean so many things in different contexts, and many people get triggered by that. So first, the main thing that I do right now, the last 2.5 years, is working on the D-Web, so the centralized web, and I'm trying to... So the almost obvious place to work on it is kind of a reaction to the current web, which many people, including myself, don't like, but I try to work on it from the place that it's nice to have a web which is more democratic and more people actually doing stuff in it. Besides being users of platforms, it's nice to have a web where lots of people can create together a platform. And that's my main motivation for what we do now. We try to create tools for we are making tools for the central as well, but the real goal is to have like democratic web in the future, where there are, and democratic is one of the words that actually triggers people sometimes, because democracy has all kind of different implementations. Some of them are amazing and some of them are less good. And we are in an infant stage that we don't know exactly how is the democracy of the online platforms should be. It's something that we experiment and find with time.
I mean, democracy is also an ideal that no practical attempt at implementation probably reaches. So I think that's why a lot of, I mean, people think democracy and substitute something that every one of us that like some state as it exists in practice, like Germany, obviously, like any of these practical states does have issues. I mean, starting with something like climate change. So substituting that to be an ideal is kind of impossible, because it's not ideal.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You're right, there's something more ideal in your democratic online governance projects.
Right, especially we want to make tools and see and let. We don't want to come and tell people who will join us, this is how the democratic structure of our platform is. This is how democratic structure of a platform should be. I saw, there's lots of democratic, like decentralized organizations now, DAOs, and I saw it happen a lot, and I am not a huge fan of it. We are more trying to build tools such that eventually when a community that has a platforms and governs it decides which democratic process they are interested in, they would be able to easily implement it. The main goal is to let the individual have more voice in the internet, and mostly to have internet where the incentives are a bit different, like not maximize profit, but maximize benefit of the users. Something which I feel when I use all the CCC tools, but I hardly ever feel when I go out of the hacker's world.
Yeah, I mean, It's like interesting, because I mean there was a lot of hope for the internet 20 years ago when it emerged, and now it's this corporate thing where like most of the big platforms are run by corporations. But then on the other hand, I personally always think there's still spaces like this one we're in right now, where the corporate thing is not dominant. I mean, the space we're in, like the people who are here, they're all not corporate. They're just like private people. And we're on a platform that is run by individuals, by organizations that are not corporates. So I think there is some space for that utopia that still exists. But of course, like the large internet, that is companies, but the other stuff still exists.
Yeah, I completely agree. Sorry, I was a bit distracted because there was a question here. I tried to read the comments in the same time.
I can read it. Maybe could you come at some point to where and how one got to act utopian? It feels a bit like the whole world is higher in different sense, and everywhere there have to be things to do or to be done, I guess.
So the question is about how do we get away from like the big picture and from focusing on all the bad stuff, and how do we get towards more focusing, how do we go about focusing away from that? Salix, do you want to answer that?
I cannot answer that. I can make suggestions, though. I think, or I can say how it works for me.
I think
none of us has complete question complete answers to any of the issues.
And then next week we do this, and then after that we have Utopia. That's how it works. I think for me it helps to have little ideas in mind as to what is my personal utopia, and to find people that share a big part of it as a point of view, or maybe even just a little part. So for example, I volunteer in a group, and there are a lot of people in this group that have different points of views, and some are a lot more conservative than I am. however, because we volunteer together, I can see that my paradigm or my activism has an influence on their mindset. So it makes them think more about inclusivity and about, progressive ideas than they maybe normally would. But it starts out with all of us wanting to help people. So we already found like a common ground there, and then we continue from there to work. I think my personal utopia. I think that, you know, this, like, find your personal piece of little tiny activism and surround yourself with people that that are active there. That's, I think, something, yeah, that helps. Because the world is on fire for sure. I think most of us would agree with that.
So yeah. You're basically saying focus on the individuals, and the individuals that you want to surround ourselves, and the individuals that you want to help.
The people and ideas, and make them into a nice mix.
I mean, so I would agree. I have like three ways. So I'm a bit repeating myself, but for me to act utopians basically means that in the present to act out of a place of building things that I think which are good, and building from a good place. The question for me is, you know, how do I reach this place in the present that I walk out of this motivation? So one is exactly what Silex said. I have a friend who is the most optimistic person on earth, and I have the Cora who is optimistic. And such people, you speak to them and they take everything in such a good, optimistic way, and it rubs on you, which is amazing. The other thing for me specifically is that when I do stuff, I try not to do it like, at least when I describe it, because words have influence, I try not to say it's against something. So that's why I don't like to say decentralized web, because it means against centralization. I like to say nowadays democratic web. And for me, it makes it like, you know, I'm building towards something, not against of something, which is already makes me feel less that the world's on fire. And the last thing, I guess, is a cliche, but it does work for me in the information age. I try to not watch the news and limit my social media who I follow, because doom scrolling is definitely one of the things that take you to dystopia. And I think that I reached a state that if something important happens, I will hear about it. So one of my friends will tell me, I don't know, I will hear about it. I don't need to chase it. And some people maybe think that this is a bit of closing my eyes to the world, but I just think there is so much noise that bothers me from thinking clearly. And also, maybe I'm emotional sensitive, but every time I see something bad in social media or in news, even if it's not important, it hurts me somewhere here a bit, and it just adds up. So I try to minimize it. Yeah, those are my three things. But people are the most important influence.
I would like to reject the idea that I'm an sure. utopian influence on you. I would like to say that you're a very utopian influence on me. you're much more cheerful than I am. At least I think so. Maybe perception is different. I think you said some very important thing there, that it's like to also surround yourself with input that is positive. Like personally, I mean, I think when you want to work on something, then you actually pull that information in, and when you actually want to do something, that maybe there's some time and space to just ignore some of that bad that happens, like in the moment, and then set aside times when you like want to work on that versus, or when you want to work on something that you can actually, that is actually in your sphere, that you can actually affect within the groups that you're part of, and then also take time to enjoy and to take the proverbial walk or in nature or in the city. I mean, for me personally, it's always one step at a time. So I try to not approach, like, I try to not solve a big problem. I try to find a little problem that I can solve and that I can actually do something about, and that I try to find the things that are close to me, that are like happening in communities that I'm actually a part of, that are right in front of my doorstep, and that are actually kind of in my personal sphere of influence, and that is work. I mean, personally, I've decided at some point to not do anything that is morally bad, and just do adverse things that are morally great with my work. And I mean, personally, I think it would help a lot if like people just refused. Or if they have the privilege to be able to do so, just refuse to work for anybody that's not at least doing something that is ethically neutral. And if they have the privilege and the resources to do so, reject working for anyone that's actually harming the world. Because, I mean, let's be real, most people who are actually employed by somebody doing a lot of harm to the world, they're usually the ones who are quite privileged, actually.
Nowadays, yes. Nowadays, sure. Yes. I guess in the past it was probably different, but nowadays, yeah.
I think I would like to challenge the notion of optimism. Not completely disagreeing, but I think there can be different motivations to act towards utopian ideas. And when you said you have a friend who is very optimistic, I had to think about a very good friend of mine who is very optimistic also. And we tend to discuss or fight a lot about that, because I feel like I'm very pessimistic. Just in comparison to him. So I do not feel things are hopeless, but I am very, I would say, realistic. And I get most of my energy from this very happy, angry place. So I, you know, I see things that I think are unfair and do not make sense. So I get angry and then I get busy. That helps me to get up. So I actually do have a high news consumption, and I don't do the doom scrolling, I think, but I do have a huge RSS feed, and that gets checked a lot.
RSS feed I also have huge, but it's different for me, at least, because it's of geek websites and blogs. It's stuff that I'm waiting to see what's new, but of course it depends on the resources. It's the social media that I do the doom scrolling.
Yeah, I think one big difference between social media and news is, and there's a bunch, but in terms of what is important to us here is most of the social media posts just give you like a tidbit of information, just one, they make one point because it has to get across to you in like a limited amount of time. And when you have a lot of different news sources, and I'm saying like really diverse news sources, like different languages, different cultures, different topics, you get a much broader picture of how complex the world is. And I like that. I like that there are many doors and there are many obstacles, and some of them, a lot of them interact in different ways. And I think the complexity is something that, and again, we're going back to this idea of like being an artist or being a hacker. I think this is a very hacker idea that to dive into a problem of huge complexity is also like diving into a puzzle. And that, you know, it's kind of fun then.
And to talk about the problematic aspects of optimism. I mean, when I prepared this session, I was talking to one person who ended up didn't really wanting to attend because they basically said, I mean, there's something very toxic to just being optimistic. Like if that's all you're doing and if that's the level you're staying on, just being optimistic, you're not being realistic, and you're just painting over reality with like you're painting a happy face over reality, and that's not a good thing to do. And I mean when they said that, I thought they were right. I mean you kind of wanna stay optimistic and hopeful and stuff like that, but you still wanna see reality. And I mean, I think that is where you come in to try to actually get an accurate picture of reality instead of maybe the one that social media is trying to have us emotionally activate. I mean that's what social media does. I mean, to retain viewership or to retain attendance, basically, social media algorithms tend to be optimized to multiply the posts that are most inflammatory, that will get the greatest reaction, and the easiest reaction to get is fear and anger most of the time. So that's what these platforms are geared towards. And I mean, maybe you're right that it's actually necessary to get a proper overview of like a field and properly study it instead of just studying kind of the social media input.
I have a question that I think everybody thinks right now. How many sources Citex do you have in your RSS feed? No, it's a joke, but I guess it's really a lot.
Neyman, how many do you have?
Sorry? Probably like 50, 60? So not that many, and it's already, I can hardly follow them.
I'm just trying to check my podcast feed, and I'm still scrolling. It must be
it's too many. I think 50, 60 sounds about right, at least like without the podcast, that's just the ones that you read. But they are, you know, broad spectrum. I think that's the point. Because a bunch of them, you know, like if you get DPA and Reuters, then it's the same news. But they're from a different platform, so that doesn't really count. But yeah, like try to, I don't know, have a, like sometimes I read RT because I want to laugh.
Just for the amusement of it. Like Postillon, like a satire newspaper, and then The Sun, and then Russia Today.
Yeah. Yeah, non-news podcasts, but also some news podcasts. Yes. I don't know. Do you know? What are they called? Go ahead, talk. But there's hammering.
I mean, personally, at some point, I just try to like my medium is actually podcasts, and when I said I listen to hundreds of podcasts. I was of course joking. I'm not actually listening to most of them. Most of them are like dead, and I just haven't decided to eject them from my feed. But I mean, I did go out and try to just see, okay, like what kind of podcast can I listen to from that's from the US. That's kind of I'm bound to listen to more like leftist perspectives from the US because I don't think I'd endure the right. But then I checked. There are some podcasts there that are interesting. But then from a lot of podcasts, some Eastern European podcasts that were interesting.
Eastern European podcasts.
Yes.
How do you find? I didn't know that.
I just googled. There was like something.
Awesome.
So let me scroll. It's actually very hard. I didn't prepare that.
Do you guys want to start a pad? Because I feel like I can always use new podcast recommendations, and I think maybe people would appreciate.
So the first thing that comes up from scrolling down is just the Ottoman History podcast, which I just basically gave me a world. I mean, I just Googled world podcasts and then like looked at just international podcasts and then scrolled down and saw what podcasts were interesting. Top Eastern Europe is one I found.
Okay, cool. I'm much less of a podcaster than you both, and the little podcasts that I listen to are in Hebrew, so they're not relevant to anyone here. It's my mother tongue, but
yeah. I mean, Haaretz has an English version, so that is more interesting to listen to.
That's true. I listen to, as like I said, as someone said here, Geek Drew. I listen to lots of non-news podcasts about esoteric topics, I mean, which I would otherwise never would get into because it's my escape time.
Yes, true. So we wrote down some questions to change the subject here. Like we have three pieces of homework because if you're like me, you found homework always particularly uplifting. I'm obviously not being serious, but whether you've done your homework. I'm not somebody who liked doing homework, but maybe some people here are more inclined. So one thing I at least asked myself to bring is good news, some good news. And for me, like some very good news these past 2 years is that there's a lot of online things. Like for me personally, and it has given me the opportunities to see some people, to partake in some events that I could have never taken part of previously to that because of disability, but also just because these things were easily accessible. You can just like pop in some conference or something if that is just open and happening that you couldn't otherwise. And you can start working with people from all over the world, from the US, from other continents that would have been very hard 10, 15 years ago, and I don't think that would have been usual just 2 years ago before the pandemic to do that. So that's very good news for me, actually. What sort of good news did you bring? Audience, if you want to respond to that, we'd be happy.
If I could just comment about what you said, I gave a lightning talk in Internet Archive like a month ago, and this is possible because of pandemic. Otherwise, I would never be able to do it. So this is the good thing. I'm definitely not happy with the last 2 years, but this is one of the good things that came out of it.
Is there like some Internet Archive building that you can go into, or is it all online? I'm like picturing the Internet Archive office.
I think they had physical meetups before the pandemic, especially because in the online meetups, they think how before that they used to go to physical meetups and go get drunk afterwards. But right now it's definitely like once a month, a D-Web meetup of the Internet Archive is online. I mean, it's not my thing, so I think that I can promote it with feeling good. If you want to know the D-Web, I am, as a person who does the D-Web, came there to study from this meetup so many cool things and
what's
projects.
What's the D-Web? Can I explain D-Web for a second?
Okay, but I didn't want to barge in and take the question of what.
No, but you've mentioned the term, now you have to explain it. Give it a second.
So D-Web is decentralized web, and it's a movement that probably goes since many years. I think that the first version of it that I know of is Freenet, which tried to do decentralized websites like many, many years ago. And afterwards, I think it's called Freenet, right? Afterwards, there was a ZeroNet and DAT and all kind of stuff. And the Internet Archive really got into it. I'm not sure exactly which date, but I know that we had like a D-Web camp a few years back, 2017 or 18. And the idea of the D-Web is that the internet was supposed to be decentralized. Those of the internet protocols are decentralized, like email and DNS, but eventually the things that won right now, lots of them are not decentralized. I mean, even email, basically, I run a non-Gmail server and my emails keep on going to spam folders of people. The D-Web idea is to build a D-Web, which is basically technically built upon peer-to-peer networks, and practically is more democratic than the current web. There are many different flavors of it. There are flavors that use blockchains, like especially decentralized name services. There are flavors that don't use blockchains at all. There is Aragon, which is like a D-Web browser. There are versions which are websites based on BitTorrent. Most of it is in an ongoing experimental change, meaning that I don't think that anybody found yet right now what is the best way to do D-Web. But we have our own version that I'm doing in my project, which is based on IPFS and ENS.
So D-Web basically distributed web-like technology used to make the web less centralized.
Yes, to make the web less centralized, and in my point of view, also to just make it more democratic, more that people are not more than users. But if you, I think maybe Wikipedia is a good example of what the D-Web should be. I'm saying it like with cautious, because I know that I'm not fully aware of the Wikipedia governance process. I know that some people are in love with it and some people hate it, and I didn't dive in to form an opinion. But Wikipedia is basically something where people who contribute a lot, does a lot of editing, at least in the Hebrew Wikipedia, they get a vote on favor decisions. And the more you are involved as a user, the more vote you have. And Wikipedia treats everyone equally, as far as I know. So you can be a billionaire, but you cannot. It hardly helps you to modify your Wikipedia entry. And so I think Wikipedia is kind of the vision. It's not decentralized like from infrastructure, but it's kind of the vision that I like as an example of what the D-Web is.
That's pretty cool. So there is one pretty big D-Web thing. I never thought of it like that. But I mean, it's nice to know that it's actually happening. So that should have given you all some time to think about the good news question. So Alex, did you bring some good news?
Yes, but I was distracted because somebody posted the physical office of the Internet Archive, and I looked it up on Google Maps, and it does not look like it's, I mean, it looks like...
It's not an office.
Yeah, but it looks nice. I mean, all right. Anyway, my good news. Yes, we talked about this. I am so hyped that we have mRNA vaccines and that they are actually, you know, getting so much spotlight, and that the development towards their use for other things than just the pandemic, like cancer and HIV, are progressing so fast. I think that's so uplifting and gives me so much hope.
I mean, having an HIV vaccine would be huge. Absolutely. That's pretty damn cool. Did anybody else bring good news? Do you have personal good news or other good news? Well, good news about the world.
I mean, my good news is that, so in this D-Web that we are building, which is based on ENS and IPFS, we are already a few thousand websites. And right now we have like a central search engine that we are building for it, and we are doing the moderation of it, and we had to block only two websites. There is no porn, there is no... anything. I mean, there are some things which are controversial, but nothing really evil. And I think it's amazing that
All things you can reasonably have a discussion about.
Yeah. Sorry?
All things that you can have reasonably a discussion about.
Yes, reasonable discussion, or even, you know, there is real evil, and there is just stuff which is completely opposite opinion of mine, but it's not racist, criminal and stuff.
Yeah. That is, I think that's pretty fantastic news.
Yeah, this will change when we reach 100,000 websites.
I mean, hopefully that stays the way as it grows, which might be tough, because when things get bigger, more idiots start to join. or more people who are not really there to be constructive. I've asked some other questions, and one thing that would interest me is like what are things that actually didn't end the world? Because when you think about it, like we have all these all these things that are supposed to end the world. I mean, the big one, the last 100 years was atomic weapons, and up till now it hasn't happened. At least I think so. I think somebody would have informed me. And then there's like the really esoteric stuff, like the 2012 supposed end of the world from the Mayan calendar, which let's be real, it wasn't going to happen in any case.
But we didn't know that. We didn't know that for sure. So.
I mean, there could be a pink elephant outside my window right now, flying and flapping its wings. It's just very unlikely. So, but I mean, when I pondered the question personally, I also thought there are some ends of worlds that actually did happen. Because I mean, when we think about the end of the world, we always think about our own end of the world. And like when you think about it, there have been a lot of civilizations that have stopped being what they were before due to just stopping or due to being replaced by something else or due to things like colonialism. So I think that's also something to think about, that actually some ends of the world did happen. But is there anything in your lives or in your that drew particular attention for you that didn't end the world? Or things that turned out better?
We talked about podcasts before, and I think a lot of you know the Flash Forward podcast. She did an episode on the millennium problem, and if you are old enough, you remember like, ooh, are the computers going to stop counting after 2000 because of a digit, you know? And then that didn't happen, and everybody laughed about it and was like, oh, you know, it never was a big problem. But she actually pointed out that a lot of people foresaw that it could be a problem and worked on it a lot to prevent it from being a problem. And so they did. So that's actually really a catastrophe that was averted by, what's the opposite of hindsight? Like foresight, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. You have the same thing now, I think, with quantum computers. Like, if quantum computers really are implemented, then all of our cryptography, I mean, lots of our cryptography will be obsolete, but there are so many people who work on it with foresight on quantum computer, like post-quantum computers encryption, and it's exactly from the same motivation that you said. And if eventually a quantum computer will be invented or implemented in a solid way and nothing will happen, it will be partly thanks to that.
I know there's an interesting aspect that worlds often don't end because we prevent that from happening. Here's one contribution from the other attendees. One good news is people. Most of them are good and nice, like the people taking part on RC3. It's so nice to see many people who are so different and have the same ideas about the world and how it should be. And there's another contribution.
I can. I just wanted to let you finish your sentence. Perhaps exceedingly obvious and good news, RC3 is happening. So many of us will get to interact with or just watch people we enjoy. Not nearly as significant as the good news like vaccines, but good also.
So RC3 is happening. I mean, we didn't exactly expect RC3 to be an end of the world. I've been told there will be one tomorrow, but I don't think it's going to be as bad and vaccines. And vaccines are a good point. I mean, I think vaccines stopped a lot of wars from ending.
Yes. And we didn't thought RC3 will end the world, but some people thought that the cancellation of of the Congress will end the world. So it's good news that it didn't.
I've been told there is a sort of world that you can't run around in, and they're going to stop that. But it will survive in our memories even after the servers are stopped. I mean, personally, I think that there's really a lot of examples of I had a panel discussion with a person, with Theodore Spalia, who I talked to 9 months ago, and he made the point that there's like problems, and problems are something you solve, and then there's catastrophes. And catastrophes actually change the world you're in. And I mean, one thing I personally tend to think about is that catastrophes, they usually send after. Like something big changes in your life or on a more grand scale. And there's people to remember that. And there's some continuity there. Things change, things are better or worse. Sometimes they're just different, but there's still some continuity there. And there's if a world has ended, I mean, there's some other world. I mean, I think in some ways, like the world we currently live in, I mean that has to end. I mean, there's a lot of things about this world that have to end, and in the next 20, 30 years, this world is going to change a lot in a way that makes it completely different. But that doesn't mean that won't be a good world. I think it will be a better world. So maybe sometimes it's even a good thing that a world actually ends.
So I think another way to rephrase your question, which would bring to maybe optimism, okay, not optimism, which is also a church role, but to utopia thinking or something, things that you thought that will be super bad, but eventually turned out good, which I had such things in my life a lot because I'm so bad at actually forecasting the future. And so for me, the best example is when I was a young teenager, somebody told me about, I was like living in the IRC, I guess like lots of people in the Congress, and then somebody told me about ICQ. And this was, ICQ came from Tel Aviv and I'm from Tel Aviv, and this was like in super initial level that they were starting at. And the person told me that those guys developed that. And my first thought, and my friends were like, who the hell needs it? We have IRC. This will not bring anything good. We were super wrong. The IM came to life, and I think that we are super good. I have so many more communication with people because of it.
So let me just explain this term for the unenlightened. IRC is Internet Relay Chat. It's like a very old protocol for just chatting with people, like group chats. And I mean, that was the predominant thing on the internet for some time, and then it was replaced by neo chat protocols like ICQ or AI. And I mean, today personally, I'm using Matrix and Signal a lot. And so that, of course, always was that ended. In this case, maybe not Ross, more chat protocols, but it's still like there's a community attached to that goes away or changes.
Yes, thank you for explaining. I'm using too many old words, I guess.
No, it's all right. I'm just trying to think of people under 30 who are not insane and still using IRC today like I am. Because personally, I still am. It's a bit of a drag, still using it, but it's useful for some things. And there's a third question we prepared, and maybe Salix wants to give us some background about that question, because the question is, what is a good reason for traveling to the year 2107 for your sabbatical? Salix, do you want to say something about that?
Yeah, I still couldn't think of a reason. I think curiosity. It's the best reason. As long as you stay curious, you always got things going on. I was super curious what predictions come true, if what problems still exist that exist today, but also what new problems may be there, you know, like what didn't we even think about? Like maybe there are more different species in the ocean that now eat plastic because evolution is like, screw you, we're just going to eat the plastic or whatever, you know, like we, there's so many things that we cannot even fathom, and I would love to see those.
So I was about to say that if anybody can answer this question, it's you, but apparently I was wrong because it's a very difficult question.
I just wanted to add that the reason it's 2107 is that the time traveler from your book is coming to represent, and you just neglected to say that, which is of course very humble, but I thought I'd just add that. I mean, I again would like to invite everybody else attending to like add their thoughts and maybe start a discussion. I mean, we can just go into some discussion rabbit hole. Personally, I just really want to see what I think there's a lot happening right now. I think there's a lot happening right now. I think with the introduction of the internet, there was a kind of end of the world there too, because it was like the world as it was before the internet. And like, I think we tend to not notice that because a lot of us lived in that world. I lived in that world for a very short time. But I felt it being different. And now we remember back to that, and that was just the past. But I think the way we do things today is very different. I mean, we can just look up everything we want to on our phones, on the bus, waiting for some other bus. So that is absolutely amazing that we can do that. And I just want to read the analyses of what that is like what happens now. And I mean, it's kind of a ridiculous answer because it just circles back to understanding the present. But like that is what I do. I freeze myself go to the year 2107 or later, and then open the search engine that will be the search engine of choice in the future, and look for analyses of what happened today.
And it won't be the metaverse.
I mean, not the Facebook metaverse, but the metaverse in general. I'm joking.
What's that? Don't explain. The metaverse.
Oh, yeah. Silex said it.
It's that Facebook thing that's going to die immediately.
Yes, it's going to be the MySpace of the future.
But there was metaverse before Facebook, and there is metaverse which is not Facebook.
It's just because they steal names and terms. It's not theirs.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm not a strong metaverse person, but I know that there is Decentraland, which is, I guess a bit like MySpace or Second Life, but just more in a modern thing where you are supposed to get your own. So you enter a different world and you live there. It's a bit like the 2D world of the Congress, actually.
With more ads.
Yes. But I like the concept because I try to escape reality all the time. So I guess it's a good way to do it. So by the way, you said about the internet. One thing that I thought would end the world when I was 12 was the internet, because between 8 and 12 I was using BBSs and I was addicted to it. And when the internet came and destroyed the BBS ecosphere, and for about a month, which is eternity when you are 12, I thought that the internet would end up my life. So,
what is BBS? Can you explain that?
It's like the internet before the internet. So if people could download, like set up their computer such that other people could connect to it. And again, I had a very narrow view of what's happening in Israel, but there were people and groups who set up like a computer or a network of computer with 20, 30 phones. And then you could go into and have chats and these kind of things. There was a mailing list called Ultinet in Israel, which I think all the geeks in my age were there in one way or another.
And then the internet came and this was my social area and changed it. And it took me a month to understand the IRC is better, but in this month, I took it quite hard.
Kalesi, would you like to read the comment that just came in the chat?
Yes. I was about to suggest a parallel between BBS and a plain text telnet user interface. Then I realized that's just as unlikely to be known.
Thank you for that comment. I now have to explain telnet. Telnet is a protocol for sending text over the internet. And you can do anything you like in it, and what it's been like when that was actually used to do stuff, I don't know, because I wasn't born yet. Just to be clear, I'm the young one here. but I mean, personally, I very much enjoy getting lost in vaults. I mean, for me personally, that has a big pastime as a child and teenager, just exploring different worlds. And I mean, that's part of the reasons why I like something like the RC3 world a lot, is because just you can enter a different realm and explore. And I mean, I'm kind of odd in it, because I mean, I often just use computer games like I literally took a walk in Minecraft. I can't be the only one, but sometimes I just open Minecraft and there's like a nice shader pack installed, and then I just go on a walk, and that I kind of enjoy that as a world.
Yeah, I agree. So in Decentraland, I got exposed to it recently because there were a few people who made a project which connect to the decentralized web. So that's how I find out things. And there, it was like a fun project. They basically gave a prize for anyone who solved a simple quest, which took you to some coordinates in this decentral world. And in these coordinates, you had like a small ball, which a rainbow coming out of it. And if you went in with your character, you got like a small prize that you can keep there. And this was fun. I mean, I got to explore some areas of this fictional world, and I had a quest. I got a prize, which I already lost.
What sort of prize did you get?
I think they gave some kind of item. I don't remember which one, because it was not the goal. But like some kind of item in those metaverses, you can have your, like in video games, your games can have its own inventory. And then they created some kind of item that you get to your inventory, which showed that you did the request. But it was more about the exploration, really.
I mean, it's very nice to know just in these worlds there are people there. A prize like that is probably. The badges we get in the RC3 world. I mean, they're yeah, like little graphics, but one thing they do show and they do say is that, like, there was some way that an actual human built that, and that you, on a way, interacted in this world. So it's not like just this realm that is kind of static. It is defined by what humans do in it.
So that's another example of something that I thought would end the world, but it turned out to have good usages, which is gamification. It was like really trendy a decade ago, or a bit less. And I hated it when it started, because I felt that it's like all kind of people try to motivate me to do things that I don't want by making a game out of it. But the badges of the art of the free world are fantastic. Gamification, it's really fun.
I love gamification. I have almost a year streak on Duolingo, and it only works because it's constantly rewarding you for every little French word that you can manage to utter. It's great.
Yeah, I agree. It took me like a year to admit that I was wrong, but yes, I agree now.
I still haven't tried. I have a friend who when I'm visiting them, I'm almost visiting, and at some point they'll take out the phone and say, "Apologies, I really need to learn Swedish now," which is a bit absurd. which is also like a nice way to do advertisement, because if your friends take out their phones to learn Swedish in the middle of a conversation, because they're compelled to do the right. I mean, that's great advertisement. I mean, I just have to say kudos there to the developers of that app.
If you take a walk and you do like a speaking lesson and you start to use like nonsense sentences, people won't bother you because you can speak nonsense sentences in French.
I sometimes talk to myself by meowing, just for the heck of it.
Okay. I don't think they have that as a language yet. They do have Klingon, but they don't have cat.
So what's the latest?
You know, like another thing for is to be said for gamification when you think about Pokemon Go and how that brought people, you know, like together, but also outside and, you know, explore the world, like the IRL world. That worked really well.
Yeah, I mean, gamification, I mean, so almost every sport is gamification. I like to play basketball and gamification that was made, to, I mean, not made, but it's a way to make me do physical activities, because otherwise I wouldn't leave the computer, so yeah. Pokemon Go is similar.
I mean, a lot of these like, new. I mean, there's a couple of these, like social technologies, like gamification and nudging, which I don't know. I mean, I'm sure these concepts existed in some way 20 years ago, but I don't think they were talked about as much as they are today. And I mean, it's interesting because we tend to right now use these concepts in a very corporate way, mm-hmm. and use them for some weird arbitrary goal like this company making money. But I mean, and then usually for anti patterns. But things that are really not that good of an idea. But I mean, you could also use nudging and gamification for good. And I mean, arguably learning a language is like certainly good in some ways, but also neutral. But I mean, you can also gamify a lot of other things. Like you could gamify like just helping your neighbors. You could build a platform around that where you just like every time you say hi to your neighbor, you could like 5 points, and then you suddenly have social interaction and have this like in this weird utopian, I don't know if it's utopian, but definitely futuristic cyborg way you have just started to talk to your neighbors again in the city.
I don't know if I want to gamify social interaction. I think that's I see potential problems.
I mean, that's Twitter, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a potential problem. That is an actual problem.
But I think that actually what the Cora said, I agree with Alex completely. I maybe don't want now, when things are relatively normal, to gamify my social interactions. But during the lockdown, the long lockdown, this would have helped me. To do things which I should have done and push myself to do within the little limitation that the little possibilities there were. And maybe there will be another lockdown, hopefully not. Maybe it would be a really cool small project to do, to gamify something that keeps people sane during the lockdown. Like for me, I started to people speak with seller in the bakery, and I made friends with them because I needed something. So.
I think what you said before, that, you know, we talk more about things like nudging and gamification, is because there's a lot more awareness as to what is a possible tool, you know, and we also are a lot more, as a whole, as a society, a lot more skilled in understanding not only visual media, but like media in general, because it surrounds us so much. So it's interesting to explore that, and it's interesting to see what kind of parameters we deal with and how we can use them. And I think it's very important to understand nudging, gamification, but also like the Bestrafung, you know, like if you get the
punishment.
punishment, all of these, well, a fine can be one of those punishments, but all these different things, to understand them as tools. And again, a tool and a weapon is the same thing, right? Like, as you said.
But you can use any tool as a weapon, usually.
Exactly.
Like you can use a tool in a good way and the bad way always. So it's like the tool itself is kind of ethically neutral. It's like how you use it.
Yes, like the internet.
I do wonder, circling back to the point about Twitter being gamified social interaction. I mean, personally, I tend to think that the way Twitter, like the way these algorithms operate, that that's probably not a good way to use it. But I mean, you could use the same tools of analysis and of technology to actually have a process where we like try to really iron out what do we want from a technology like Twitter as a society. What are our goals? That what should happen in a platform like that, and how can we actually use algorithms in an open and transparent way to do that for a society instead of just fulfilling that need that like some random company of being used? Because I mean the way these companies optimize is like they just want attention. So what they're going to do is like always maximize for being more and more addictive. And I mean, I think it would be possible to have different optimization goals that could be really interesting to have in online platforms like that.
So, I mean, one of the original, ideas of hopes for me for social media is what it was, that it would give you lots of independent journalism. But instead of that, at least what I got was less independent journalism and lots of fake news. It's very difficult for me when I see stuff in social media, in my professional, even in my professional area, to know if it's a fact or if it's truth or not, if it's something which was researched or not. But I'm not sure I don't know how to use the tools to implement this goal. So if I would have known, I would have done that.
I mean, there's a lot of effort that is involved, like because you actually have to do all the analysis. I mean, it's very hard as a developer to also do that, because that's kind of like even just finding out what you want to do, that is kind of a different job description, isn't it?
Yeah. It's two roles in one, and it's difficult to do.
I mean, we're in an odd position as like these technologists of basically watching this. I mean, we're engineers who are like in the hacker community, I think engineers who decided to like also do social consciousness in some respects and like have a hacker ethics, but like I mean there should be dedicated people for that. So I think from what I'm hearing, like our conversation is circling to an end. I would ask you, both of you, Salix, do you want to plug anything?
Do I want to plug anything? Well, tomorrow night I'm going to be VJing at 10 p.m. at Ixheim. The set is going to be drum and bass. And it's called Maskenball. So I think you need like a minimal ceiling because you'll be jumping a lot to this music or wear hard helmets or something. Yeah, we would love to have you there.
Or listen to the stream on your mobile phone outside. Like that's something that's possible to you today.
Yeah.
Okay, it sounds good. I actually try to get a drink and attend the party. I'm going to plug into the comments the website of this project that I'm doing now. It's called the Asteroids. It's like supposed to be Ethereum Asteroids, but then we also find out that Asteroids in Spanish means like asteroids, the drugs. But now maybe it's a bit too late to change it already, the name. And if you're curious about the D-Web that we are doing, we want to have different voices who discuss how to create democracy for an online platform in a way that benefits the people living in this platform. We don't know. We more know about technical ideas. And we already have a small community of about a bit more than 100 people, so it's fun. It's a good stage to check it out.
So the website you just pasted in the chat is easterrights.bth.limo, and Salix posted ulteriorflux.com. These are the two websites.
Ulteriorflux.com is divided. It's one part links towards the book, and the other one is for the AI band that was screened 2 days ago at the Congo. Maybe there will be a recording of that, I think.
Yeah, it should be, but it's part of the regular program.
Cool.
So the AI band project is awesome. Sorry.
Thank you.
So you can check out both the book and the AI band project, the artificial intelligence band project, on ulteriorflux.com. So Alex, thank you very much for attending and for spending time with us on Utopic Thoughts. And thank you very much, Naaman, for attending to you. It was a true pleasure talking to both of you.
Thank you for inviting us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you so much to Khaleesi for being our herald today and reading all the other attendees' questions. And thank you to all the other attendees for like taking part and being a part of this.
Yeah, thank you. It was really great. I think it was super interesting.